Blog Talk Radio.
Part 2 continued from yesterday. This is Jasa Sagonige,
a 7th grade grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. Folks, the scriptures say my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Before he passed away in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all 145 past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. We had a very close call at the end of last month. We almost didn't raise the funds that we needed to stay here on Blog Talk Radio. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look. OCO, Ginalee, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
It's a very interesting tattoos and insignias on these creatures' bodies. You know, fortunately, they were mummified. Very little archaeological evidence ever found with them to attribute them to a specific culture or point of origin, but sunburst star patterns and spirals in the temple area, you know, almost Atlantean. I'll tell you what, when I think of...
Well, let's take it back further. I've taken it back to Mu.
Mu.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't help looking at a globe or a world map and see how all of the continents once fit together like some great jigsaw puzzle.
I am so excited about that piece of information. I'm going to contact that university and see if I can't get some more information on that.
I would imagine the anthropology department has a published paper on it.
Yeah.
You know, they spent the state's money doing the study, so they...
Okay, anthropology department in...
University of Idaho at Moscow.
University of Idaho.
Now, a minute ago, you talked about how every once in a while the Earth reboots. This show, Prophecy Keepers, is loosely themed about Native American prophecy and Earth changes, and we have correlated now that and we have links to prove this at prophecykeepers.com, PROPHECYKEEPERS. Pope John Paul, medicine people worldwide, the Pentagon, NASA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the United Nations, climatologists, crop researchers, solar scientists, the largest reinsurers in the world, oceanographers, they have all put out statements saying that we're looking at a climate collapse. Now, you know, the insurance companies would be at the forefront of this, and you know, the UN is warning of the Middle East of a locust plague of biblical proportions. Leprosy is making a comeback. And even our growing plants are if you look at the growing charts in your gardening catalogs over the last few years, you can see that the zones are moving south. So,
well, I see that you have something on your on page 9, mountmatrix.org, page 9 about this climate changes.
Yeah,
how to survive
with the changes in climate.
Yeah.
I want to let folks know that, you know, the Gulf Stream is shutting down, volcanism is increasing. We're heading into a new ice age, and the Mayan and Hopi elders predicted all of this. And we have resources at prophecykeepers.com. We have a double CD set, 1,400 megabytes. All the prophecies that have ever been published that I could find, along with 1,350 megabytes of information on how to survive, what to do, what not to do, and for a donation of $19.99 plus shipping, and you can either pick that up at prophecykeepers.com, or we have a toll-free number, 877-412-2012, reminding you that we're coming up on December 2012, 877-412-2012. Anywhere in the U.S. and most of Canada, or outside of that area, you can call the country code for the United States, whatever that is, and the number is 206-984-2286, 206-984-2286, and the message will tell you how you can get a hold of us and take care of that.
Okay. Now, Ron, going back to the Mound Matrix, what are you trying to accomplish? I'm curious, and I'm sure that the listeners are as well, with your work.
I try to do very empirical studies, and the next step on that project would be to actually visit the mound locations and take GPS coordinates at each of the sites so that we can purify the data. I saw a wonderful movie recently called Revelation. It was released in Europe, an English production with Terrence Stamp. And it deals with the sort of a sci-fi genre of trying to locate the nails from the coffin of Christ so they can recover his DNA. But they go through the whole course of discovery, going through the matrix of the René Le Château pattern anomalies and that sort of stuff. And there's this wonderful segment where they show computers that are mapping and charting out these anomalies automatically. You know, it's a program that, you know, it will find these pattern anomalies.
And uh-huh.
It just gave me such a thrill to see that, you know, we're moving toward that direction, that I can gain access to a tool that, you know, might be able to help correlate these site locations and then get back to the center point. So if we can refine that large pentagram pattern on the page 8 of the Mount Matrix site and find the center point, then perhaps we will find this previously unknown cave entrance.
Well, Ron, you've seen the I Am America map that's put out by Maria Del Toy.
Right.
Well, the head of the dove is right there in the mind of the dove, you know, right there in the eastern Kansas area on that map.
Right.
It's a very important area.
Well, wouldn't that center point be the pyramid? And then take it all the way through the center of the Earth to the opposite side would be the four-corner area?
We've done some research on that, but it's also very interesting to note the 32-degree parallel, or the 31.27, I think it is, latitude of the Giza pyramid.
Yeah.
When you run that line directly around the planet to the United States,
yeah,
it hits the east coast of Florida, and you have seven mounds on a straight line all along the 32-degree parallel that ends at Cibola in Texas.
Really? Now, I don't know. They've got this place down in Yuma, Arizona, that they have, there's a plaque on the ground, and it says, this is the center of the Earth.
Huh.
Ever heard of it?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I got pictures of it. We were there. And I thought, well, you know, they're trying to say that the center would be, okay, the Four Corners area. But now, and they said that this was based on shots that, you know, that they took from space. Based off the shots that they took from space, this plaque was where they found the center of the Earth. And that's right outside of Yuma, Arizona, on the California side, just as you cross over the California side.
City called Cibola in that area, too.
Oh, yeah, really? Well, you know what? I'm going to have to check that out and see if I can't find your lines. So you say take it from the pyramids, and it'll go right from the pyramids to Florida, from Florida to Cibola, Texas.
Yeah, south of Dallas.
Yeah, and then I'll extend that out, and I wonder if we're not going to find the...
We will find it on the same.
I'll bet you anything. And see, it's not really publicized. But they have like a pyramid sitting there, okay? Now, it's a new pyramid. It's not an ancient one, but it's a new pyramid with a bronze. And right there in front of this pyramid is this huge bronze plaque that they put into the, you know, they put like a cement, a cement platform, a flat cement platform. And then they inserted this huge bronze plaque, and if you look at the plaque, it says, this is the center of the Earth.
I wanted to touch briefly on the work of Carl Munk.
Very good.
The Idaho State University project, just to go to Google and put in the search terms University, Idaho, and Bigfoot, and you'll come up with the Idaho State University press release from the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization at BRFO.net.
BRFO,
Bigfoot Research Organization.
BRFO Research Organization.
And I won't give you the whole URL because it's too... but anyway, just put in University of Idaho and Bigfoot, and it'll be right up at the top of Google search. Idaho State University researcher coordinates analysis of body imprint that may belong to a Sasquatch.
What's the date of the release?
The day of the release, October 23, 2000.
Oh,
you know. media's not paying much attention, are they?
No. And, you know, they keep saying, where's the proof? No,
well,
I want to see the proof.
I know some kids. I live in an area south of Salt Lake City where I went to school And there were some kids back there in the 60s that were up. See, American Fork, Utah has always had a kind of a weird reputation, especially up around that mouth of the canyon. And there were some kids that were up around the mouth of the canyon and along the road that leads just at the just next to the bench where it starts going up the mountain. And they were out one night, and they were their car was attacked by Bigfoot. And this thing was violent and was showing its teeth and screaming, and they took off, and the thing, you know, got, I think they got to 25, 30 miles an hour before they left the thing in their wake. But they did recover hair samples and turned them over to anthropology department at BYU, which, you know, disappeared into the bowels of Brigham Young University. It was never heard of again.
Okay, now, speaking about, you have mentioned, you know, well, how were they able to map this out, right? Well, now, if you, I have a website, burlingtonnews.net/Lemurian1, all right? And on that, it has a map. It was a huge stone map. Of course, this is just a segment of it. But there was a huge stone map. It's called the Map of the Creator. Do you remember that? In this map, I have the title. It says, "Now take a look at man not only existing, existing 120 million years ago, but having aerospace capabilities." But anyhow, it shows this map. It's a big stone, like it's a section of it, but it's made out of stone. And it says, "A find of Bashkira scientists is contrary to traditional notions of human history. Stone slabs, which are 120 million years, covered with a relief map of the Ural region."
Yeah. Ural Mountains.
Yeah, and that map is 120 million. They've dated it to be approximately 120 million years old.
Haven't doubted at all. If you look at the, you know, they're talking about the extinction of Mars about 500,000 years ago. You know, this is, I hate to broach this subject, but, you know, Mars is gaining such attention with NASA's budget for Mars now at $400-500 million, and we're sending all these little go-karts up there to check things out. Every time they get more data, it just seems to, you know, that they guffaw their own research and say, "Oh no, that can't be," you know. But when they released, what was it, about 2 years ago, they released 78,000 photographs of the surface of Mars from that previous mission flyover, and people are finding objects, you know, on the planet besides the face on Mars. You know, and I've long accepted that that thing is real. You know, the 1978 photographs were accurate.
Cydonia.
Yeah, Cydonia and the whole complex with the pyramids and everything. That there are many more anomalies on the planet. There's one photograph through Victor Hoagland's Enterprise site that you can see a spacecraft crashed into the top of a mountain.
And yeah, we have that on our site too.
EnterpriseMission.com, Richard Hoagland, right?
It's got to be 2 miles long, that craft, you know? And
yeah.
It's shaped something like a sea-form creature, you know, but it's huge.
Yeah.
Embedded into a mountain, and it's not a natural phenomenon. You know, all of the seemingly glass enclosure walkways, you know, that go for miles and miles. And
well, now they're thinking that they might have discovered some sort of a tunnel, like
transport system.
Yeah, transport, right. Made out of plastic,
yeah,
or glass.
Yeah, broken open to a fissure.
Well, we had Jeff Burks on, and Jeff was talking about they just announced that they found salt there.
Yeah,
salt. And so we have water now. We have blue skies, because Jeff Burks was one of them that realized and made an announcement, and it's like almost like days later, NASA admitted what they were doing, but Jeff had noticed that they were using the wrong filter. And with the wrong filters, naturally we're getting the wrong colors. So once they put and Jeff said, if anyone wants to check this out, try this. He gave the number of the filter. You just put that filter on and you'll see the real colors. Well, as soon as NASA realized, you know, that Jeff had made that announcement, you know, through our station, you know, and all of a sudden he says, well, we were using the wrong filter. So right, as soon as that happened, then all of a sudden we were getting colored pictures coming from Mars, you know, showing blue sky. So we've got blue sky, so we got, which would show atmosphere. We have water, definitely water, and we now have salt. And then plus that, we've got this one picture on our site, burlingtonnews.net/spiritmars, I think number page 6 it would be, where we've got a picture of a petrified log.
I also recall a couple. One was a serpent-like-looking creature that stuck his head up out of a hole and was looking at the little rover when the photograph was
taken. Oh, I've never seen that one.
And another where the little shovel scoops out, you know, to take a rock sample, and breaks off the edge of a rock, and this luminescent oozing material flows out of it.
I have to go there and check those out. I haven't seen those.
Sounds like a whole different world.
Well, there's possibility that Mars might have been a live planet during the same time as Moon.
I wouldn't doubt it.
I'll see you. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
Yeah, there was a movie that went out in limited release, The Mars Mission. I don't know if many people saw that one, but you know, they did a fairly good job of, you know, showing how it was a remnant of a culture there, and that these guys eventually made it to the face on Mars, and it opened up, and you know, there was like a IMAX in there, and it explained to them.
Oh, I saw that. That's good.
It was great, and they had extincted their planet, and many of them went off deeper into space, but one did come to Earth and make a genetic deposit. You were talking about the age of things earlier, and you reminded me of a story that I read, an article in Michael Cremo's Forbidden Archaeology. Now, this is a 990-page book, I believe, but, you know, I mean, to sit down and read it, it's impossible. I tend to go through the index and then go back and read things. But in Africa, they discovered metal spheres ranging in size from only an inch or two in diameter to 4 and 5 inches. And that they were metallic, man-made, and some of them were actually incised with bands around the center. And they had two compositions, one a solid metal sphere, and the others were filled with a spongy-type material. When they carbon dated this, they came at 1.3 million years old.
Yeah, yeah. Here's something that I haven't even yet gotten out, but let me read this. It says, Churchwood explains that civilizations existed for tens of thousands of years before summer emerged. central to these Sumerian accounts were the gods with little g. The Sumerians called the Anunna, sons of An. Their later Semitic names were the Anunnaki. Those who from the heavens to earth came, and Dengir, the righteous ones of the blazing rockets. The Anunnaki were a reptilian race from the stars. The Sumerian tablets, but this part is good, the Sumerian tablets describe a collision between the moons of a planet they called Nibiru, and one orbiting between the present Jupiter and Mars. The debris from the collision created what the Sumerians called the Great Band Bracelet, which we call the Asteroid Belt. Now, these Boeing physicists, Boeing engineering, the Boeing physicists suggested that part of Jupiter broke away on impact with another planet. This is the body we now call Venus, they concluded. It was projected towards Mars, destroying the atmosphere and life on that planet. After devastating Mars, the Venus comet was caught by the gravitational pull of the Earth. They added, it made several orbits of the Earth, causing the tidal wave and devastation that ended the Golden Age, and hurled vast quantities of ionized ice at the poles. In momentum, then hurled it into its present orbit as Venus, the planet. Synchronistically, the most ancient Mesopotamian and Central American records don't include Venus in their. In their planetary accounts, but the later ones do, and there was a focus in Venus with human sacrifices made to it, and this came out of Brian Desborough's book, The Biggest Secrets.
One of the proofs that the Mayans and the Cherokees are the same people, as Don Enrique told us, is that we were very concerned about the Venus transit. And our calendars
are the same. Well, it almost indicates to me that at one point in time, Mars was in our orbit, or Mars was where Earth was right now, and then somehow it got knocked out.
It got knocked out there, yeah. To a half a million miles away.
Yeah, and then when there was that collision, it got knocked out.
It's not in a steady orbit, because it ranges from, 250 million miles to 500 million miles, so it's in an elliptical orbit, If it hadn't been affected by something, it'd be more in a synchronous orbit like the rest of our planet.
Yeah. See, there was it says here that in the 1960s, there was a group of physicists from Boeing that got together to launch a private study aimed at explaining the many anomalies of the Earth and other planets of the solar system. And this is what they concluded.
You were touching on this... in close proximity to Earth. I was watching a PBS special recently about the Nazi Empire and how Hitler had based a lot of his mythology on the fact that those Aryans were the direct descendants of the Atlantean race.
Yeah.
And the crux of their mythology was that we've all heard the Third Reich,
mm-hmm.
Nazis' Third Reich. They contend that during the time of Lemuria or Atlantis that there were four moons are circulating the Earth,
mm-hmm.
and they could be these other planets, but that as the orbit decayed, one of them hit the Earth and caused global devastation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we know that a large body hit off the tip of the Yucatan and left a glacial ring crater, a meteor impact ring craters, in the coastal shorelines there into the ocean, and that the Earth's crust is shattered down to 2,600 feet in the Gulf. And generally, the Gulf is only 600 feet deep at max. There was recently discovered, this goes clear back to Mel Fisher in the 80s, said that he had discovered a sunken city off the coast of Cuba in the Gulf of Mexico, and he decided not to reveal that. After Mel Fisher died, and by the way, he's the one that found the Atocha and the El Capitan and all these great sea treasures, but his children have carried on the Fisher Exploration Company and rediscovered that sunken city off the coast of Cuba once again. So since then, the Cuban government is now cooperating with a Canadian firm called Geomar, and they are mapping the city that's down 2,600 feet below the ocean now. So it's a possibility that some of these legends that Cuba was actually part of this Atlantean island with the three rings around it, you know, and that all that we see left today is post-crater impact, you know. I want to go back to Hitler and his studies. We all hear that there was this feared SS organization, but the true purpose of the SS, and it grew to 400,000 men during their time, was that each SS division had an archaeologist put at the head of each division, and they controlled these archaeological digs to support the Nazi mythology that they were the direct Aryan descendants of this Atlantean race. So their whole thing was about rediscovering all of this ancient mystic knowledge. It's unfortunate that it was at the hands of this terribly misguided megalomaniac. You do have to look at the accomplishments of the Nazi Empire to see, you know, that.
Well, and that's it's unfortunate too, because everyone sees Hitler as such a monster that anything that has Hitler's name associated to it, they don't want to read. And they have no idea how much information that man had pulled out on the ancient mysteries.
Yeah, and much of it was put in the, well, it's called Tempelhof Air Base in Berlin, Germany now. The Air Force had it for years. My dad was the senior air traffic controller there during the post-World War II era, where we were airlifting and everything to keep the city alive when the Russians blockaded it. When the Russians occupied Berlin, they came to the Tempelhof complex, which was laid out in this huge Nazi swastika symbol with the eagle and the wings and everything, the whole airport, all the buildings were laid out in this big complex to emulate the Nazi insignia. And underneath this base were these huge catacombs of vaults where they were bringing all this material that they had amassed from their archaeological digs and expeditions in search of proving their ideology. And when the Russians found these vaults, they dynamited them open and caused a flash fire and burned everything.
Oh, how terrible. How terrible.
Now, they weren't dumb enough, I'm sure, to put it all in one place.
Yeah.
Because today we're still finding caves where they had amassed artworks.
Well, the black market now, over there, they're releasing a lot of KGB secret documents, you know, to the highest bidder.
Yeah, some amazing footage of a crashed flying saucer that I saw on a special not too long ago.
Well, what is really amazing is there is a sci-fi put it out, and they only put it out once, but I was fortunate enough to have someone that I did an interview with that he happened to video, or he taped it, recorded it. And he recorded it, and so I have a copy of it. But it showed in the 60s, when we were going off to the moon and trying to do all these space missions, Russia was concentrating more on the psychic end. And they went over there to the pyramid area over on the rover in Cairo, and they found what they said that they found the secret tombs of Osiris. And in there, they actually found the coffin, the sarcophagus. And they they took the lid off, and inside was the mummy of Osiris. And they tested it and found that it was not human, you know. So, and anyhow, they videoed they actually documented it, you know, and they had the video, you know, or the tape or the film of them showing them taking the top of it off and showing the mummy, and I have that.
Reminds me of the Cusco skulls in Cusco, Peru.
Yeah.
In the National Museum, they have a collection of skulls.
Mm-hmm.
And these, they've tried to explain them that perhaps the individuals as a baby were bound to a board and taped down, and it caused the skull to grow upward and backward. But I can't accept that excuse me, because of the fact that the normal human cranium is about 1,300 cc's in volume.
Right.
That these are in the 2,200 to 2,400 range. So they had a whole second brain compared to us.
Yeah.
And the cheekbone where we have below the eye ridge, we have a cheekbone. It ends before the ear. And skulls in Cusco, their cheekbone extends around behind to the base of the skull in the rear to help support such a heavy cranium.
Yeah.
So it is not a normal human skull.
Mm-hmm. Well, that one that they found, that they say is the tomb of Osiris, they have a picture of that skull as well, you know, and the same thing. We have a website, again, but burlingtonnews.net/skulls, and we have those pictures there.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've actually done some overlays and trying to, you know how they do clay modeling of skulls?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could get Mary Pat Garrett to do one of those?
Oh, really? It's funny they haven't. Of course, the anthropologists, science and governments, they don't want us to know what these people look like, you know, because they're still denying their existence.
Wonderful technology where they can digitally photograph it.
Yeah.
And it takes a laser beam and shoots it into a vat of polymer,
mm-hmm.
and it'll create an exact replica. So you don't even have to destroy the original
skull.
You can create a replica, bring it up out of the polymer, and then do the reconstruction there. But I've done some drawings of what these individuals would look like.
Oh, really?
Had their tissue back, you know, just based on my experience with anatomy.
Really, I'd love to see what you came
very
up with.
Very interesting, very Atlantean.
Oh, but you don't have a picture of that on your website or anything?
No, these are just personal sketches that I've done in my sketchbook.
I would just love to see what you came up with. Maybe you could send me a copy.
Sure.
Okay, thanks. I would hold you to that.
Okay. Give me your email and I'll shoot it over to you.
Okay.
Isn't he a fun guest, Mary?
Yeah, well, I've been looking forward to this one. This was one of my favorite subjects, this bone matrix anyhow, you know, and so I've been looking very much forward to this interview.
Well, you know, one of the things about Ron is that he's very humble, and I guess I'm the person that's going to have to announce that that the Elder Hunbot's men deigned that your website is a Mayan mystery school.
Well, thank you, Blood. I appreciate your
You don't even have information on your website. You know, there's other Mayan mystery schools around, but
yes, we've had a number of conversations together, and you know, he believes it is part of the awakening process. You know, that America must realize its destiny, that there's this huge wealth of past, and I suppose that's part of the reason I brought up the Hitler thing earlier. Archaeology is such a new science, and I am so embarrassed by it being so closed-minded. You know, it was only really formed in the 1880s.
Yeah.
And within 50 years, you know, Hitler was abusing it as a science to promote his global ideology. And I think at some point they had a meeting after World War II, and they said, look, we're never going to get wrapped up in one of these again. So here's the party line.
Well,
we're all going to stick to it.
Well, I don't know. I think that a lot of this work is still carried on secretly and still not shared with the people. You know, I think that a lot, you know, there has been talk, and I agree with it, that a lot of the scientists and, you know, in archaeologists during the Hitler period was brought over here to the United States and continued working on the projects, you know. So somebody asked me a while back, they says, well, how come? Why would government, why would corporate religion keep this information from us? It doesn't make sense. And then what I tell them is that our whole belief structure, our whole society is like a domino factor. And if the first part of it was a lie, and that was the starting of the domino, and that fell, then the rest of the dominoes would follow. And that's exactly what happened, is they based everything off a lie in the very beginning. And so they don't, you know, based, what I'm talking about is all these pre-existing races. You know, they wanted people to think that everything got started with Adam and Eve, with you know, the Hebrew culture, you know, and so And then, of course, naturally, we eventually found out that that wasn't true. Well, then they tried to take it back, well, you know, back to Egypt, and then we had to take it back to summer, and now we're taking it all the way back to, and now they're Atlantis. And then once people start, you know, they finally started saying, well, maybe there was such a place as that. Now we're taking it back to Mu. And now we're coming up with these finds that man may have been here 10 million years ago. Well, 10 million years compared to what, 3,500 BC? I mean, that's a big stretch.
Yeah, but look at the planet. It's, what, 4 billion years
old?
Yeah,
well, there again, though, I mean, if we could take, that's what we have documented, that's what we've got evidence of is 10 million years. But, I mean, how far back can we really take man? You know?
Well, when Thomas O. Mills comes on, he's going to explain that, you know, the Hopi say we're in the fourth world headed into the fifth. And what he was taught while his mother was running the cultural center there in Hopi, taught by the elders, that they taught, Native Americans talk a lot about balance, and they mean it literally. He said that the purpose for pyramids was to literally balance the earth like a tire wheel.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of Native Remedies. As the systems of the body are interrelated, proper functioning and health occurs when they are in balance and harmony, so it's important to consider taking a holistic approach to caring for your body. Provided that they are manufactured in the correct way, natural medicines can work quickly and safely to create holistic balance in the body to support systemic health, relieve ailments, and help prevent future disease. Most natural remedies do not produce negative side effects, and unlike conventional medicine, natural remedies do not just mask symptoms, but they get to the root of the problem to support health and affect healing at the same time. Most homeopathics are even safely taken by people of all ages and during pregnancy. Homeopathic medicine is actually suppressed here in the United States. Outside of this country, a large majority of medicines that are prescribed are homeopathics. Did you know that the cure for malaria was developed by the man that invented the homeopathic system? That's right. So friends, please take my advice. Visit the front page of prophecykeepers.com and click on the Native Remedies banner and find out what all the excitement's all about.
And the Creator was going to give us 8 chances to learn how to balance the planet. And after that, we weren't going to be given any more chances. But if we didn't hurry up and build enough pyramids in the right spots, that every 3,600 years or so, we had a change of worlds. And which is an exciting concept.
Yes, but there you go, right there. You said 3,500 years.
Yeah, 3,500.
Okay, now times that by 8, and what do you have? I mean,
26,000.
And we're talking. Like I said, I've got a map here on my site that is 10 million years old.
So now we go around the clock.
Right, and you can imagine other civilizations how far along they are compared to us, because, you know, every 3,600 years, the paw comes along and slaps us back into the dirt again.
Well, see, you know, but there again, we go right back to what these Boeing physicists came up with, you know, that, you know, during the Atlantean period, we may have, we've already had, you know, like with Jupiter crashed into a planet that once orbited between Mars and Jupiter, and are today the debris from that planet. So we got the, so right at that point in time in that sentence there, you can see that we've already had a major crash.
You talk about asteroid belt, the hammer break,
yeah,
spoken of in Genesis.
And so, I mean, you know, Mars has been hit. We've been knocked out of orbit. Jupiter, you know, I mean, just up in space alone with the planets, I mean, we've had some major happenings. So, and it's, you know, and it's changed our, you know, way of life here on Earth.
I always wondered how the moon could be so pockmarked with craters, and yet the Earth wasn't. And,
yeah.
And then they did a special on that, and showed how the Earth has just been clobbered, you know,
yeah,
over the eons of time.
Yeah.
And caused, you know, mass global devastation. When I'm out there walking these bluffs and cliff faces and stuff, I can see the stratification of soil layers and stuff. And you can see the bands where some global event happened. You know?
Yeah.
The record is there. And it has to be hundreds of millions of years.
Yeah. And, yeah, and, you know, it's just like, it's so far beyond our comprehension of how far back man really goes.
So my dad is always asking me, you know, being the eternal pragmatist as an air traffic controller, he raised me saying, don't believe anything you hear and only half of what you see, you know?
Yeah.
Because those pilots up there don't know what they're talking about and the radar might be wrong.
Yeah, it is true.
His job was to save lives.
I think what we've realized is that we don't know anything.
Mm-hmm. And we're coming to that point. So you have maybe two crowds, you know, the ones that want to know and hunger for it.
Yeah.
And the ones that don't want you to upset their current economic model of the world.
But hopefully, you know, like I said, our belief structure, our society is based on a domino factor, you know, and, you know, eventually, you know, that number one domino is going to tumble. And then with everything else coming down, maybe at that point in time, you know, maybe we'll, because there's so much out there, I mean, you know, that's hidden, you know, the Vatican's got the huge libraries, so, and you know, in the yeah, and the Native Americans, they've got all their mysteries, you know, that they're not sharing. The Buddhists have their secrets that they're not sharing. That the Theosophists the same way, and governments the same way. It's like nobody wants to tell us anything. I mean, it's just like, you know, we, you know, the common man, you know, we just kind of like dig around the scraps and try to come up with a few pieces and try to put it all together.
My dad said things like, how could you keep something like Roswell a secret? You know, people would talk. There couldn't have been, you know, there couldn't have been a crash or whatever. And, you know, for years he was saying that. And then one day he told me that a former Air Force associate of his who was stationed at Roswell at the time admitted on his deathbed to his wife that it was in fact a crashed craft. And that he had seen the occupants and that he was involved with the whole thing, and he was sworn to secrecy, you know, at the risk of his family. And so, you know, my reply is, you know, everybody's got their button, you know, whether you want to threaten my family or some kind of government investigation or an IRS audit or whatever, you know, there's easy ways to.
Oh, you bet. You bet. You talk IRS or audit. You watch how fast I shut my mouth. You know what I mean. But
at this point in my life, I was writing something like that. I just start singing my next song and go for broke.
but then
that's the key word there. You know.
But the thing is, they would find something else blew out, or it could be your family. You know, and like Roswell, there was a case that was with a family, you know, that knew something about it. The government comes along and says, well, you know, the guy says, well, how are you going to keep me from people talking? He says, we could take your farm. Your children can disappear. There's a lot of things that can happen to you. Now, is it worth it? You know, the man sits back and thinks, but no, it's not worth it.
So what are you going to say?
And besides that, there are so many people that, you know, like, there was a handful of people that said it didn't happen. Well, these people, you know, were government. They said it didn't happen. They've been proven to lie that they lied about the original story. Then they got caught lying about other things, and got caught lying about some other things. So now we're supposed to turn around and listen to a handful of people that we know have been lying to us, or do we listen to the masses that have been out there that are honest citizens that say, yes, it did happen. Yes, we did see this.
And I think we've gotten to a point in our culture now where we see a news report on TV and they tell us, oh, there's no mad cow disease in America.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone automatically just discounts it and thinks, oh, they're lying to us.
Well, I'm not buying beef. I haven't bought beef since that whole thing happened. I heard, I just got a report in here that the FDA, is it?
Uh-huh.
They said that they do not, or went to those slaughterhouses, says, we do not want to hear any more reports about mad cow disease.
Those were my father's instructions as an air traffic controller. We do not want you to report UFOs you see on your radar.
We don't want to report one of those.
Well, so they hear the American public say, oh, well, we haven't gotten any more reports about the mad cow disease, so I guess it's okay.
Uh-huh.
No, it's not okay, folks. They're just not allowed anymore to report any mad cow disease that's coming, is showing up in the slaughterhouses.
Yeah. We were told that the CIA did not experiment on unwitting public with hallucinogenic drugs.
Yeah.
And yet Sirhan Sirhan was a subject of theirs.
Yeah.
And NPR did a two-hour radio program on the assassination of Robert Kennedy and showed how Sirhan Sirhan had been a tool or, you know, an experimental project of the CIA with the LSD and hypnosis. That did not infect the men of Muskegee with syphilis, and yet they paid him $25 million for doing it.
Oh, well, look at, what about the Gulf War Syndrome?
Right. It did not exist.
Now, that was some woman, from what I understand, it was some woman out of Chicago that broke that. She worked, where was it, Social Service Department or something?
She was a nurse.
She was the one that she started finding, there was somebody that got cancer. And he says, now, wait a minute, there's no way I can get cancer because I don't smoke, I'm a health freak, I do exercise, blah, blah, blah. He says, there is no way that I should have cancer. So then he started checking around and found out a bunch of other people were having all these different illnesses that were over there with him. So he went with to her and told her about it. They compiled a bunch of evidence. Now the government saying, no, this didn't happen. And then finally they came out with it and says, well, maybe it did.
At least it didn't take as long as Agent Orange to go public.
Oh, Agent Orange, I mean, my God.
It was 20, 25 years it took for him to come out.
Well, you know, here's one you guys probably haven't heard of. The Port Chicago explosion in 1940.
I take that back. That was Agent Orange I'm talking about. I'm sorry. Okay, go on, Blue Water.
Why did the government just happen to have a news camera running that captured the tremendous explosion at Port Chicago, ostensibly of two ammunition ships that killed several hundred sailors? And why is that the film stored at Los Alamos if it wasn't a nuclear test?
I never heard that one.
Yeah, it's put in Port Chicago, Wovoka. I've got a copy of it on my website. Yeah, it was really interesting.
I was just wanting to regress to something early on in the segment where you mentioned the Keto West Society.
Yeah.
I had recently read some material that they worked, the Cherokee Keto West, the Blue Lodge, worked very closely with the Confederacy and their Secret Service, the Knights of the Golden Circle. Can you shed any light?
The Blue Lodgers, well, the Blue Lodge is a Masonic organization, and the Masons made heavy inroads into the Cherokee Nation and a lot of the other nations also.
Constant breach of contracts and treaties with the federal government?
Albert Pike, who wrote The Morals and Dogma, was the Confederate representative, Indian agent to Oklahoma.
Right, he started the Albert Pike Masonic Missionary, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's the one that wrote Morals and Dogma. Exposed the Luciferic connection with Masonry. But now the Blue Lodges, the Knights of the Gold Circle, Blue Lodges, they were all interconnected with some of the leadership of the Indian nations. I don't know. I nowadays, I wondered if it wasn't just another form of colonialism, because the Catuas fought against the Blue Lodgers. The Cherokee Civil War started about 10 to 15 years before.
That's when Chief John Ross broke off from them.
John Ross kind of flip-flopped back and forth, you know. What happened was,
that he was ritualistically murdered here in Wichita?
Well, the the U.S. government met at Port Gibson, and by treaty they were supposed to stay there. So the Cherokee Nation didn't know what to do. So and even after they pulled out, they kept pressuring us. What did they expect us to do? And then when we sided with the South and we had no one else, then when the South lost, they blamed the Cherokee Nation, and they got dumped on after the war. But John Loss actually ended up having himself abducted by Union troops. And lived until 1866 and died in Philadelphia, never returned to the Cherokee Nation, and neither did the Treasury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, was it about $7 billion?
No, it was a million.
Oh, just the Kitawa Treasury?
Okay. Yeah, the Cherokee Nation Treasury was like $5.5 million. And they're supposed to get it. 1835, it was guaranteed. And I'm not a big fan of John Ross because, a lot of people are, but, it took him 14 years with a lot of Cherokees starving, before they got that money.
Yeah, and they had to get their power base wherever they could,
Yeah, that's right. We wanted to go back to Mexico, but they wouldn't let us leave.
Uh-huh.
So it was, tough decisions all the way around, I'm sure Chief Ross did what he felt like he was supposed to. Everybody was in it.
And so they were subjugated for trying to hold up their own traditions, and then, spoon-fed these new traditions.
Mm-hmm.
The old ways are just being lost. I mean, over time, people are drawing, they want to be drawn back to it, but
they're gone.
The keepers.
No, they're gone. The only way they're going to return is through the Spirit, and the Hopi prophecy and the Bible both say there'll be a restoration of all things, and these medicine societies are coming back.
And the Hopis are waiting for the Pahana to bring back the corner of their prophecy stone.
That's right. And Aaron Donahue, the Luciferian, is claiming to be Pahana, but that whole thing is. According to the prophecy, it's supposed to happen in Arabia.
Now, isn't that the one that Aaron Donald?
Yeah.
Is saying that he is too.
Yeah, of course. Aaron hasn't read the Hopi prophecy well enough to know that he was in the wrong town when he was claiming that he was fulfilling the Hopi prophecy. It's kind of a laugh.
Well, did he have the stone?
Did he? Well, supposedly, he said he did, but he knew where it was, and knowing where it was and having it are two different things, and that was a claim. And all I've heard on him are claims.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so many, poor, unwitting kids that believe what he has to say, and they haven't done their homework. And even when you confuse them with the truth, they'll come back and you say, well, what are the Hopi know? Well, they're the ones that kept the prophecy and didn't write it down until about 50 years ago, and they're the ones that kept it, so of course they would know.
Well, I think this is part of the issue here is that, we are more or less trained, bred, programmed to be followers. And each of us individually needs to be a leader,
That's right.
One that tests the facts and seeks the truth on its own.
Well, the elders are saying the ones that we've been waiting for are us. And, we shouldn't wait any...
Us who?
All the elders.
Our generation.
Yeah, our generation.
Oh, our generation.
We're the ones we've been waiting for.
It's our last chance. I mean, we look at it in terms of, say, the average age of your audience, what would you guess right now?
It's so mixed. I can't give you an average.
So if we put them at 35, 35
yeah,
years old.
We have a lot of kids listening to us, though. A lot.
That's great. And it's a real challenge for you. Us all together, to make an impact, to get these leaders to listen. I do, in spite of what a wasted effort I think it is, call my congressman and write letters and...
I do too.
Be very vocal and boisterous and not be a sheep. Don't follow. Lead, even in your own life, by being an independent thinker and just boldly going forth in your life and deciding what you want to do and don't let anything get in your way.
Well, what is this? What is this prophecy, anyhow? That Aaron's talking about that he claims to be the white leader.
White brother.
The Pahana would be the true white brother.
Right, and of course the true white brother. It's the Hopi lore says that the history, their oral history says that they are. different place, and that the group split in four different directions, and the Hopi agreed to keep their haircut, that window pane haircut, and some other things, so that it would be recognizable. But they were told that when their brother returned, that they would be lighter skinned, they'd be a very large nation, and they will have turned white. And so, you know, some people expect True White Brother to be a person, you know, but it could actually be a nation of persons. It could. It's kind of hard to know at this point.
Yeah, like when the Queens talk about man now, you know, man is actually a group. You know, it's not just one person.
Isn't the whole story analogous with the Maya legend as well, with the Kukulkan?
Yes, it is very similar. Back to the seat of the jaguar. It's a very similar story, but
well, what is that one? What is the man?
Kukulkan was their returning white prophet that would, lead their race onto the greatness and their spiritual fulfillment. And when Pizarro or Cortez,
Pizarro was South America.
Okay.
Cortez.
When Cortez arrived, he fit the physical characteristics, and they embraced him with open arms. But he was a slash and burn conqueror, and just extorted and took and stole everything and burned all their cuts.
Kill Montezuma.
Yeah, they took Montezuma.
Well, then, basically, who you guys are actually talking about is not one person, and it's not the white person. What it is it's the Danite tribe.
Well, there are more of
Well, the Danite, spelled Daanite, they originated from Amu, and then they were a lighter skinned race, and then they moved out, and then later came back. One of them was your Canaanites, your Phoenicians, and then some went up into Europe. Others went into North America. They just spread out all over and spread their religions.
And as an aspect of my research, and the archaeological background of these cultures, when I look into history, is who were the progenitor culture? Is that a singular or plural statement or question? I'm not sure, but,
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of wisefoods.org. Our native ancestors stored away lots of food in case of emergencies. Thousands of years of sad experience taught them to be prepared. The traditional Hopi stored food enough to last for 7 years. So did the early Mormons. Nowadays, everyone unwisely depends on supermarkets for their food supply, and few people know that there is only a 3-day supply of food in the American food supply chain. Now, should some disaster befall us that would cause the big trucks like I used to drive to cease delivering our food, you'd be in big trouble. It is for these reasons that my family purchased a year's supply of 3 different breakfast and 10 delicious dinner entrees from wisefoods.org. These foods are freeze-dried right at the field where they are picked and processed, and are fresher and more nutritious than any supermarket food. You just add hot water, and they're good for 25 years being stored. A year supply from wisefoods.org fits in an area about 4.5 feet by 4 feet by 18 inches. I can literally get it all in the back seat area of my Honda Civic. If you stay at home, you won't need to go to a FEMA refugee center should some disaster happen. Did you know that David Ramsey, David Gallagher, Laura Ingram, and Michael Medved have also invested in Wise Foods? Why don't you visit wisefoods.org today and see why.
One and two, but it's on page two. You'll see what I'm talking about this Danite tribe. And they carried, they carried with them the red dirt. They said it's from the motherland, and a lot of people thought that was Mars, but it's actually Venus.
Mm.
So that would mean that the Danites very possibly were Phoenicians. And now a lot of people will laugh over the fact that Venetians, but they don't realize that at one point in time, Venus was not where it is today. And yeah, and it was, you know, it was inhabitable. And there used to be a story. And, well, actually, there's pictures of this guy. Have you ever heard of Valiant Thor? Or Thor Valiant? Can't remember what.
That little gray on Stargate. No.
Well, no. Well, anyhow, there's this guy. He's light, you know, skinned and black hair. And he used to live in the sub base of the White House. He had a whole complex area underneath the White House, and he claimed to be from Venus.
I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. And so anyhow,
spent a couple of years advising our leaders out there.
Right. And anyhow, and he had with him his brother, and there was also, and then there was another woman that was with him, and she had the blonde hair, you know.
Later wrote Ancient Atlantic and He Walked the America, said that the real secret lies in the languages, tracing the language specs. He said someday the linguists will figure out what happened.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, and you know, when you look at the names for the Phoenicians, the Phoenicians were also known as the Mauru or the Maori, or the Maru, and the word marooned comes from, you know, being put on banished to an island. That's a Phoenician term.
You find the word Mu in there.
The Phoenicians became the Venetians of Venice, but you just pointed out that Venus. But you know, Venusian and Phoenician, it's very plausible at this point. I had not realized until you said that, or did you mean to say that, Mary?
Yeah, well, I didn't know that that's what you guys were talking about.
Well, yeah.
You know, I'm hearing this white ruler, but, you know, I had no idea until just now. But you see, that's where my research has been, you know, focusing on, is with Mu.
From my young daughter.
It says, well, here's what I have. The Danaans, Danans, D-A-N-A-A-N-S, left Atlantis to settle in Asia Minor, now Turkey, Greece, and the islands of the Aegean. They are claimed by Old Testament to be the tribe of Dan, but the history surrounding them is quite vague in the Bible. The real history behind the Danans is that the name is derived from their serpent moon goddess, Dana or Diana. Now there you go with your Native Americans, you know, what the woman is, the chief. They made made the headquarters of their culture on the island of Rhodes. There you go, Rhode Island, a name that originates from the Syrian word for serpent. Rhodes was the home of the Danann Brotherhood of initiates and magicians known as the Peltians. Greek historian Diodorus said these initiates had the ability to heal, change the weather, and shapeshift into any form. The Cainites also descended from the Atlantis/Lemuria. Mark Amaru Pinkham describes the migration of Atlantis/Lemuria. Mark Amaru Pinkham's The Return of the Serpent's Wisdom. You can find it there. One branch of these Atlanteans were the Tyhenians. T-Y-R-R-H-E-N-I. Okay, now if you look there under that in mine, you'll find that they were red-haired. They were a red-haired race, white people. The people, because I have that on my mummy section, I have mummies with that show them. The people after whom the present Tyran Sea is named, the Tyrans eventually split in half to become the Etruscans. Thank you. And the Carians or Phoenicians, a tribe which eventually migrated to Canaan.
King Solomon, the Phoenicians.
Territory on the Asia Minor coast, which can be translated as the land of the fire serpents. And Canaan uses the K sound because it says with the K sound of the serpents. Sir Lawrence Gardner, frontman of the ancient Imperial Royal Dragon Court and Order, which was originally created in Egypt about 2000 BC to support the agenda of the so-called Dragon Kings or reptilian bloodlines. Gardner says that Sumer,
Sumer,
in the, oh, thank you, in the, in the old Irish language means dragon. He writes, it is also reckoned that the subsequent culture of the region, phonetically called Sumerian, was actually City Merian, S-I-D-H-E, Merian. In fact, the case of this is now...
In other words, Sidha. See, when Mark...
Yeah, there you go with your Texas, yeah.
When Mark Amaru Pinkham comes on the show here at the end of this month, and the week before him, 2 weeks before him, Dr. Clifford Alford, they're with the Sidha Society. The Siddhas are the oldest spiritual missionary societies in the world.
Okay, so anyhow, it's also reckoned that, okay, in fact, the case for this is now considerable since the early ringlords of the Scythia, S-C-Y, Scythia, the Tutha D. Canaan King tribe was actually, was actually called the Sumer. Another researcher, Frank Camp in the Netherlands, tells us that the Sumer means land of the dragon in the language of the Scandinavian Vikings. There you go, back to Turkey. The founders of Sumer were the same Anunnaki who controlled Atlantis in the latter stages and led it to its destruction. The ruler of the Sumer Empire were white Nordics, blue-eyed blondes. They were extraterrestrial origin, and their ruling bloodline had interbred with a reptilian race to produce the hybrid DNA, forming an alliance with the two races. This is why these outwardly white bloodlines were symbolized by the terms like Dragon King. And then I've got like a link going back to Steve Tribe of Dan. But anyhow, someplace in here it shows that these people, when they left Atlantis, took with them some red dirt, okay? And this red dirt symbolized their homeland, not of Atlantis, but where they originally came from, Venus.
And this is the same place that Asa Deluge, who's the traditional chief of the Chiricahua Apache, and others. When you see this, the...
Well, if you turn around, well, Blue Other, if you turn around and you follow all my links through, you will see that right here is where in all your serpent culture, all your religions of the serpent start.
And the red dirt land.
And the red dirt land. Everything starts right with the Danans.
And it's Oklahoma now.
Uh-huh.
And that's the home of the Cherokee.
And you see, and there's, and there, and see, and everyone, and then, like, and see, they left Mu. They left Atlantis, because when they say Atlantis, they actually mean Mu as well. And they left there and said that they would be back. And so always from that point on, everyone started looking for the great white leaders to come back,
We lived on an island off the coast of South America, and that. Elders were unwisely fooling around with something called white fire.
Well, that was Mu. And Mu was destroyed. There was a great war between Atlantis and Mu disappeared in the flash of an eye. But Atlantis, it took long, and then Atlantis went through, like, stages before they finally disappeared.
And the Maya claimed their point of origin was a land to the east, the first land to the east called Atlan.
Mm-hmm. So anyhow, if that helps you guys out at all,
We were also talking about language and tracing it back, for the origin.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to mention, an insight from one of my daughters was that her life goal was to break linear A. That we currently know somewhat linear B language, and that it's early Greek and early context there. But to break linear A, we haven't done it yet. And you can type in linear A on the web, on the Google search, and it'll put you up, a picture of what the language looks like on the screen. So what do we all have in common around the world? We have all these different languages, and the Bible even tries to make an explanation why we all speak different languages, but it's a little simplified in my view. But what do we have in common? It's number, a base 10 math system that has pervaded all cultures.
Well, one of my professors at BYU said that one of the not real well broadcast Mormon lores was that the reason why they were building the tower, and they were so single-minded that they would have succeeded at building the tower to reach the city that was in low orbit at the time.
How was
that? And they were not supposed to, because they weren't worthy or something, so that's why the confusion of tongues happen.
Well, now, from what I understand, I talked to, who was it? Jason Martell.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, or was it, no, it was the protege of Zachariah Sitchin. And he was telling me, and I can't think of his name right now, and I'm sure he's going to hear the show and kill me over it, but he was saying that the Tower of Babel actually was a launching pad and a rocket.
Michael L. Morton?
No. No.
Morton is also doing some great work.
Yeah,
I was curious to look him up on the web.
Jordan Maxwell?
No, I remember I had him on. He did that documentary as well, or he had that flight presentation as well.
Oh.
I can't think of his name right now. But I'm
sure. That was a couple, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. But anyhow, it was like a rocket, you know, missiles, and so anyhow, and actually that would reach the heavens, right?
So when
a tower that reached the heavens.
Lemurians branching out, you know, either to escape the battle that was going on between the cultures there or the catastrophic changes that were going on.
Or both.
You know, moving around the planet. Their early inroads, I mean, the Egyptian culture, for example, emerges as this advanced civilization and only declines over time when the opposite should be true. You know, over their 4,500 years or so, you know, they are putting up great pyramids and then
But remember, Sumer originated when the gods returned from the heavens. And so there was a great catastrophe, and the Anunnaki left. And then they came back, and when they came back, they brought back the knowledge again. So there was an advanced culture already thriving before Sumer.
Eric Parker,
yeah, thank you.
And this is covered by Sitchin in Chariot of the Gods or Fire of the Gods. Gold of the Gods is a really good one. People should read that. There's a golden stella tablet that was found with 56 characters on there. I've been doing quite a bit of logistic and petroglyphic and hieroglyphic studies.
Well, see, what I've got is what I did is I started with Mu, and I did a bunch of websites on Mu. And then I cross-referenced with a bunch of other websites. So I have, like, Mu. Then you can link to all these different red-haired races that I uncovered, you know, with documents, you know, pictures, you know, showing skeletons, showing that they had uncovered and showing mummies. So I have, like Mu, and then I go into red-haired races of giants, the tribe of Dan. And then I go, like, red-haired mummies, the Canary Island, China, Egypt, Amun Ra, Mammoth Cave, alien hybrids, Peru, New Zealand, Ramses, Odin, red-haired mummies of the United States, you know.
I think something that people should keep in mind when they listen to a program like this is that, you know, maybe a new listener is going, wow, this is really strange stuff, it's way out there, but oral tradition and folklore, you know, these legends, were the only way they had to preserve their history.
Yeah.
The Vikings never wrote anything down.
Yeah.
And yet they grew into such a large force that they took over all of Russia. The Rus tribe was asked to come in and rule them. They were in constant battle, and they asked the Rus to come in. It became Russia.
Yeah.
You know, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Greece, everywhere.
King of France said, you know, just anytime you want my treasury, just come take it. They were so scared of him.
And they made it into the United States, you know, settlements in Oklahoma, you know, all over the place you have.
Well, every culture has a story about some white man that appears, you know, in a white robe, in sandals.
Right. Everyone wants to make him Jesus.
Yeah.
No.
You know, and I don't want to belittle Christianity in any way, because, you know, it's a great force and it keeps a lot of order on the planet, but, you know, on the same token, there's a lot of evil and they're paying off a lot of settlements over that.
Yes, but who's not to say that that wasn't a race of people?
Right.
You know, that came from Mu and was sent forth as missionaries.
Well, the Siddha Asaka were the oldest missionary society in the world. That's what our next guest will be talking about.
So,
65,000 years ago.
And see, like, Mu would have, and see, Mu was the one that worked with the viral power. where and there that there you have your matrixes, and that's where you would have, you know, what they would have taught what your bones would have originated from. But you see, they would have to have the space, you know, the space travel in order to be able to shoot down to see, you know, the full landmass of how it worked.
Many archaeological artifacts of flying craft of
mm-hmm.
some kind. There's a museum in Wichita, and they have some gold little figurines of looks like an F-16.
You know, right.
These are several thousand years old. Egyptian culture, they found them carved on the stela. In Peru, they had the legend of Oriana, and that she landed in a golden craft, lived among them for 40 years, had 75 children, and then left and said she would return one day.
Yeah.
And they didn't, just as a culture, mass hallucinate this. This is an oral tradition, part of their culture. And these oral traditions...
Well, you know, a lot of people right now, they're frightened about these so-called aliens. We kind of hate even using that word anymore, but they're frightened about these people saying, well, where are they coming from? Are they coming from, you know, other planets? Are they interdimensional? Are they, you know, coming from underground? What, you know, for me, I say all three.
Yeah.
But you know, they're frightened. But the thing is, it seems to me, and I talked to somebody else about this, and it seems to me that maybe about 3,000 years ago,
be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
Before that, these people walked among us. They taught us. They were, you know, teachers, more or less, you know, and guides. And they were totally accepted among the societies. And then for some reason, something happened, and I think what it was that, you know, that huge nuclear war that we had, atomic war, during, you know, those days. But because they left, and then for some reason, everything got wiped out. All the knowledge of these people were wiped away from us, you know, out of our memory banks. And now they're starting to come back again, just like they did in the day, you know, from, or maybe they've always been here. I don't know. But it just seems to me that, you know, we're so excited about them coming, or we're afraid of them coming or whatever, but it seems to me like they've been here for millions and millions of years.
Mary of Nebuchadnezzar's dream, there's a prophecy that is said in these days. Of course, it goes through the different body parts of Nebuchadnezzar, and in the period before us was Rome, that was the legs of iron. But when I hear the Christian prophecy people talking about the ten toes, well, the ten toes are iron, which is meaning that we would be a remnant of the Roman civilization, and our civilization today and even Cherokee civilization. I mean, when the whites got here, we just so admired them. We rewrote the Constitution and based our laws on.
Well, I think that the reason you did those because of that ancient prophecy that this great white leader was coming back, and you confused that with this European race.
Exactly, but the other thing was is Nebuchadnezzar's dream. The iron in the toes was mixed with miry clay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you look at what miry clay is gray.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what we have a seen and an unseen world system here. Now the grays are the ant people. They've been here. They're the watchers. They're the ones that are. They may be manipulated by others. There may be different groups of them. But no, they're here for a purpose. They're here for a reason. And I think they're underground.
Yeah, instead there's some kind of treaty formed at 75 bases.
Yeah, it's really really interesting when you think about the miry clay is actually the aluminum comes from miry clay, and that's the color of their crafts is that aluminum color.
Yeah. Well, each person describes them according to their age. You know, Middle Ages describe them as one thing. We describe them as grays and aliens.
And the perception of fear of these creatures goes back to the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah or
mm-hmm.
whatever. You know, I think they still have radioactive readings from some place out in the desert there in the Mideast.
Well, there's evidence right here in the United States that the war... It took place here in the United States as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, I had read some stuff about the Nephrites and the Lamanites had a great battle in the Midwest here in Oklahoma, and then in fact they have found a region along the Arkansas River down there that they found just thousands and thousands of skeletons.
Yeah.
So.
And also when the final battle was fought up in New York, and when they in Western New York, when it was the area around Hill Cumorah. When it was originally farmed for 10 miles around that area, and we talked about the 50 million people that, I think it was 50 million, it was a large number of people, 15 million that died there. The ground was so bleached with calcium that it was white for miles and miles around. It's all disclosed in a book that was written by the first governor of New York that talked about the mounds. The palisade, the hilltops that were had pits for people to fall into, and palisades, sharpened stakes, and so forth. And by the way, there's I found a website, prophecyupdate.com/miry_clay.htm. This guy has figured it out too. MIRY_clay. prophecyupdate.com/miry_clay. And he's talking, I've got a little picture of an alien in here, but. So in other words, he's seeing something too where people are beginning to kind of wonder. There's a lot more in the Bible.
Well, you know, let's visualize this. You know, let's go back 3,000, 5,000 years ago. And all of a sudden, we're having this world war with spaceships, atomic bombs, okay? Everything blasting all over the world. People got millions and millions of people just dying, dropping dead, or from the first blast, other ones dropping over from radiation poisoning. Okay, but like almost like total annihilation of the human population. Right? I mean, that is a horrific picture. I mean, and now the human mind has a way that if it goes into shock, you know, it goes into a sense of denial, a sense of amnesia. Now, what? Maybe that's what happened. The world, it went into the people of the world. Actually, it went into a state of amnesia. You know, because it couldn't face what had just happened to them. So, you know, so they, or maybe not amnesia, but a sense of denial.
Mm-hmm.
So they just says, okay, I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to remember what happened recently. You know, so we'll just pretend like it didn't happen. So they just wiped it out in hopes that would never happen again.
And little clues to that show up in Renaissance art, you know, that there are crafts visible in the backgrounds of some of these paintings.
Yeah.
These are, you know, classics of the masters, and yet they're slipping in little stuff like that.
And, you know, like if we are reincarnated souls, you know, it would be understandable why yet today we are still in denial of these people coming back, because we don't want to have to deal with it again, you know.
Well, let me ask something, Mary. Not meaning to get you off that subject, but what this is supposed to be the end times, and the Bible says that in the latter days it will be as it was in the days of Noah. Well, what's going on in the days of Noah, and what was the reason for the flood? It was the interbreeding with the race of giants. The fallen angels. Well, we call them giants now. Well, the fallen angels, whoever they were, well, what do we got going on right now? We got an interbreeding genetic program going on with the Greys. And then you have this thing in the Bible about the kingdom in the latter days would be a Roman-style kingdom mixed with the Grey, you know, that's interesting. And this guy came to the same conclusion in this website, you know, that the Greys were fallen angels, and
well, the thing is, as far as I'm concerned, all fallen angels is the people that came down from the heavens. You know, I don't think that they're evil or anything. It's just, but I think one of our clues, once we are able to figure it out, is going to be a big piece of the puzzle. And that is, if you read your Bible, listen to the Native American history and various ones, you'll see that there was a point of time that the people were obsessed with wiping out the giants. During the time when the Smithsonian even turned around and tried to wipe out all evidence of this giant race by dumping all of it into everything they could find, you know, skeletons, blah blah blah, dumping it into the sea. But so I'm saying that nobody has yet figured out what happened around the world, where it was put, like a collective type of consciousness where everybody felt this urge to wipe out all the giants. Now, I was reading Native American history, you know, and it seemed like, you know, they, again, were obsessed with going out looking for these giants and wiping them out, killing them off. In the Middle East, the same way. They were obsessed with the fact of making sure that not one survived. But the thing is, you know, and I'm always saying to myself, what was there, you know, that we're not hearing of why it was so why everybody felt it was so necessary to wipe these giants out? Because the giants, you know, they say that they were, you know, they come up with the excuses, you know, that they were hostile, they were cannibalistic, blah blah blah. But I don't think they were, because I'm also seeing evidence that they may have been very gentle, and that they actually tried to avoid battle, you know. But they would hide in caves, and the Indians would come and close off the entrances where, you know, they couldn't get out, you know, and starve them to death, you know.
Well, human nature being what it is, and that's where, you know, my friend Robert Three Eagles found two of them in a cave down in southern Utah.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, there's a important link there, you know, that we need to follow up on and find out what was there about these giants that people were obsessed with the idea of wiping them off the face of Earth.
Well, I think, you know, as humans we have a natural tendency to fear.
Yeah.
You know, and so therefore, oh, they're so big and scary, you know.
Well, that could be
it. I mean, it's what happened to the Cro-Magnon, you know. The smaller ones wiped them out because they were so big and scary, and they were stealing their women or whatever.
Well, and that could be it. I mean, you know,
one culture replaces another culture. We call it war, but, you know, it's, you know, like, no offense to the Indians, you know, but, you know, the Indians complained about the white people coming in and taking over. Well, of course, then the Indians turned around and they, you know, with the culture that was here prior to the Indians, you know, they wiped in their histories, you know, that they wiped them out, you know. We have about, remember, Blue Otter, how you talked about they came across the moon people, the blue skinned people, and wiped them out, you know.
Well, the Crow Creek culture, I think that's in Nebraska. You know, they archaeological dig found a massacre of a bunch of people, and they found out through looking at the contents of the stomachs and conditioning of their teeth that the stuff that they were eating. Apparently the environment was under a lot of stress. There wasn't a lot of food, so ergo, with a massacre thrown in a.
Another example: George Catlin did an extensive study in the 1800s on Native American cultures and found that the Mandan spoke a language that, if you had a Welshman with you on your expedition, you could speak to them.
They'll tell you that they're descended from white people. They say they're about 30%. I just lucked out, and I was on a bus. When I was training as a trucker back in '98, I was coming back from on a bus from because my trainer got sick coming back from North Dakota. The guy walked an Indian full blood walked down with a buffalo skull, and he'd been drinking, so I knew they'd probably throw him off the bus if he made any trouble. So I said, "Here, come sit down here. We've got to talk." And come to find out, he was a Mandan, and his mother was the last Mandan speaker. They were transcribing the language, but I said, "Hey, what's this kind of thing about you, you know, being a descendant of Welshman?" And I said, "Oh yeah," he says, "absolutely, you know, about 30%." But
Welsh is descendant of the Danon.
No, they are Sumerians.
Well, Danon is Sumerian.
Well, the Welsh are. Their name was Cymri, and they came down from the Cimmerians, the Cimmerians were the father of a lot of different cultures.
But
they were a maritime culture,
yeah,
and they were short and black-haired, and which is another indication that they were of Cimmer.
The Welsh are Mandan.
The Mandans are part Welsh, yeah. You know, the Okanostoda.
I picture the Welsh as being the red-headed race.
No, they were dark-headed and short.
Maybe there was two, because the Welsh that I know of, they have the Celtic cultures.
Well, that's the ones they were replaced by.
Right.
But of course, now you got to remember, you got your another culture that came out of the move was the Amazon women, and they went back up into Europe, and your Amazon women were black here, I believe. I can't say for sure. You know how that is. Who knows?
Swedes are mostly people. The people think Swedes are light haired. Actually, it's the Germans and the Norse that are the blue haired and blonde eyed. The average Swede is looks like a Mediterranean, almost a mixed blood Mediterranean person. There were my cousins. My father's father was born in the town that was the capital of the Vikings, and all my cousins, the Persians and the Vegmarks, they all look like me. They've all got the green eyes, the black hair, and the olive skin.
Where was the capital?
Lidköping. That's where they make Volvos. No. Or Saab.
But anyhow, you know, we're not going to solve it tonight, that's for sure.
But it's so much food for thought.
Oh, isn't it great? I love it.
Little mundane lives, and we go do our jobs and stuff, and yet, you know, this mystery abounds.
But Ron, you got to get a copy of Ancient Atlantic. There's a linguistic chart in there. I don't know whether you've seen it.
No.
You got to get it. It's a $30 book. You can get it off of used.adall.com, and it's L. Taylor Hansen's other book, and it's a huge tome of you know, linguistics and stories, you know, from North Africa and South America and Central America and the United here in the States, and there may be some stuff in there.
Well, Churchwood's
the title of the book again.
It's called called Ancient Atlantic by L. Taylor Hansen. It's actually Lucille Taylor Hansen. She wrote under, she wanted people to think she was a man back in those days, if you were.
Yeah.
But I'll send you the name, the ISBN number.
Great. I'll get that.
Good book.
Yes, I've done extensive linguistic studies, and I found there's so many parallels, you know, just like I got into the Maya enough to speak it gutturally, but having grown up as an Air Force dependent, you know, I spent 9 years in Germany and 4 years in Italy, and I was an altar boy, so I learned Latin, and we went to Morocco, and I picked up Arabic, and, you know, so I had a lot of exposure to linguistics.
Sure.
At a young age, you assimilate it well, you know, so... What I had noticed was when I was reading Mayan text, there was so much parallel between that and German in the ancient Prussian culture, you know. And in the Mayan phrase, Telefontun is one who speaks from afar. And in German, television is called Telefunken.
Yeah.
Huh.
And, you know, these parallels consistently pop up, you know. And now I also was raised speaking Italian, and I work around a lot of Hispanic people now. And I'm finding, you know, I mean, there's not much difference when you think of Spain to Italy, but there's a vast difference in the language, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, the parallels, you know, that maybe go back to the Latin origins of the language or whatever, but, you know, Latin itself only thrived for 200 years, and yet it impacted all these European cultures. And that was Linear B based. So we're only a step away. You said we may not solve it tonight, but hopefully we're putting information into the minds of the listeners that can.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, because you know we've got millions of people that are going to be listening to this, and you know, face it, you know, they have a lot of the clues themselves, you know, where they might be able to piece it together where we don't know they might.
Yeah, not doubt your insights. Go ahead and check it. Check the facts.
Yeah.
Look for something original.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
You may be the only one to have ever thought of checking that one thing. And that's been the boon to my success in research.
And you called it serendipity.
And now, and listeners, what he says is very important. You know, if you have information out there that you think that would be, that could help put this, give us a piece to the puzzle, contact us. I have it on my website. All you have to do is click, there's a contact link right there, and you just click contact, and it'll take you to my email. And I share my email with Blue Otter and with the people that I interview. So anything that you have, send it to me, and I'll make sure that both Blue Otter and Ron get it.
And we answer our email.
Yes. And so does BUFO Radio. We answer every email that comes in, you know, so, and I'm sure Blue Water does as well.
Absolutely.
And
Yeah, so I think that we've shared an awful lot tonight. A lot of great food for thought here.
Just the possibilities.
Yeah.
Just get people to think about the alternate possibilities of history other than what they were taught through their traditions and other public schools.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that we live in a manufactured culture. And we're constantly bombarded every day with reinforcement to live within those norms.
Well, I'm still not totally convinced that we don't live in a matrix.
Well, we're fed fluoride in our water, which you know...
the only thing you said tonight that scared me, Mary.
Yeah. Well, have you ever thought of that, though?
Yes, yes.
You know, I mean, I watched that movie, The Matrix. And, you know, and I know that that was sci-fi, and you know, and I don't believe that, you know, that we're being, you know, run by machines or anything
no,
like
but
that.
We do have
but,
an antenna array up in Alaska that's supposed to be some kind of weather experiment, and yet, you know, it can affect human brainwaves on the 7 megahertz range, which is where we operate.
Well, why have most of the astronomers in the world been in Antarctica for the last few months?
And they've been going public with the meltdown, you know. They're telling us, you know, we have... this thing that's within 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I heard that they were actually thinking about, I don't know how far, anytime they bring something up like, we're thinking about doing this, it usually tells me that they've already done it.
Yeah,
they
started
but,
5 years ago.
Yeah. But I heard that they're talking about a computer that will actually be able to copy your thoughts. Copy the brains, all the data in your brain, it'll be able to copy and put on, you know, and put it on in a file for whatever reason. I don't know, but that's a scary thought. You know what? What I'm thinking about is, you know, like, cybernetics, you know, where. I'm thinking, well, could they create a person, you know, clone them, and then take the information, you know, out of a person's brain, you know, and put it into one of these clone beings, you know, like recreate an Einstein, for instance, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows?
Yeah, I understood they held off releasing the Human Genome Project results until after 2000, so they didn't inadvertently contribute to bringing back someone we've been expecting.
Yeah,
well, you know, the old saying, dear Horatio, there are many more things in this world that are even thought of in our philosophy.
Well, I'm beginning, you know, when you go back, when we were talking about, you know, like I said, I've got that map that was called the Creator Map, and that map, they've dated back to be like 10 million years. And the only way that they could have done this map was by shooting it from space.
Right.
All right? Now that 10 million years ago, there was a man on Earth, all right, that was already advanced enough to be in space and using equipment to map out the Earth.
And this is supported as recently as 1512 AD when Perry Reese did this world map and it had Antarctica on it without an ice cover.
Right, yeah, I have that also on our site. But, yeah, that's on my Lemurian site. But what I'm saying is that if we know that the Earth has been destroyed, or you know that it's not the Earth itself, but the habitat of Earth has been destroyed many times over. So I'm thinking that what happens is a culture. There are many cultures that there's an elite factor there, you know, that has the knowledge that it gets carried up to a certain point. Something happens here on Earth, you know, and like the Earth has been rebooted. Okay, everything starts over, but this one elite factor remains.
Yeah, the master plan.
They remain. They may have left the Earth and then came back again, and then they reestablish this knowledge. And these people, if they have this type of knowledge 10 million years ago in order to do the Creator Map, then they would probably have the knowledge to know, because we're there almost now, maybe we already are, they'd have the knowledge to know how to travel, maybe time travel, going back and forth. So I'm thinking that maybe a lot of the people that people are looking at as alien may not be alien at all, but maybe men
you know, that are from our past, that are so, futuristic men, you know. They're not only from the past, but they're also present and future, because they have learned how to travel in and out, weave among the dimensions, you know.
Yeah, I think that was touched on in one of the books in my early stages of awakening, called The New Frontier, something like that, with Richard Kenninger, and how an entity came to him in the form of this Dr. White, a bearded, white-headed man, and he was one of the Great White Brothers, and opened his mind and, you know, his insights to the fact that, you know, we are on a human life wave evolution. And we get these 9,000-year cycles to achieve this perfection, and, you know, we're winding toward that now. And again, you know, it's rounding, but we're still in that 3 times 9, you know, in the 27 orbital rotational cycle. And we know we're coming up on that. You know, we're going to shift from the age of Aquarius soon until, what's the next one that blew out?
The next age?
We're moving from Aquarius.
No, the Aquarius will be the next age.
Yeah, okay, moving into it. Yeah, I'm sorry, I got that ingrained because of that old song. You know.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, you know, that it is our time to shine, you know, to open your minds and your heart. I'm trying to think of the researcher's name, Dan Winters, who is a big influence as well, and he came up with a heart monitor that hooks up to your EEG and an EKG simultaneously and shows that you can actually control your spiritual life force and get them in unison to where you're in balance and you're actually, you know, one with this Earth Gaia force and the spiritual heaven force of the Godhead or whatever all at the same time. And he did it by plugging in a phi ratio component between the heartbeat and the mind alpha waves, and shows on a big screen projector that as you think happy, peaceful thoughts of, you know, fulfillment and things like that, they automatically drop into sequence together. So, you know, whether you want to call it biorhythm or whatever, you know, you are in control of your own self, you know, and you can achieve a calm, satisfied, you know, seeker spirit to walk the path, you know, because that's what we're here for, is to learn your medicine path and to walk it and to be aware of all the things going on around you and not to let the little stuff upset you and make you angry and get you out of balance, you know. In martial arts, they teach us to be centered. And I bet I took martial arts for 4 or 5 years before I learned that your center is, you know, about an inch below your belly button. So if you're trying to get calm and you need to know how to do it, just mentally touch yourself an inch below your belly button and then close your eyes and go inside yourself and touch that. You'll actually feel a shift in your body's balance and you'll calm down again.
And the mudra position helps.
Mm-hmm. Explain that one.
The mudra position, it's just a... You know, you touch the middle finger to your thumb. It's just a way to program yourself to...
Oh, it's in the Om, yeah.
To relax. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just a way to teach yourself to relax. Mm-hmm. It's part of the Eastern traditions of...
And Eastern has so much to offer, you know. And it's a balance. You've got to pull from every piece that works, you know. The Tibetan monks are fighting, well, they're not fighting, but, you know, they're living for their independence there because they're occupied by China, but, you know, they still manage to hold on to and preserve their culture and their beliefs. Imagine, you know, I mean, we have it so easy in Western culture. You know, most of us live in a democracy, a free republic of some kind, and it's hard for us to even grasp what the rest of the world is going through. But one thing is uniform. You know, we are all seeking the light, and you need to continue that.
This is Yasa Sagonige, a 7th grade grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evenings and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous plant-based native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keepers Preppers Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault.
I don't want